Morning. Today's daf is Ches in Becharos. We're starting today on the mission on Zayin Amud Beis. More discussions about ingesting food from a kosher animal to a non-kosher animal, and basically food passing through a non-kosher animal, food passing through a kosher animal, etc., etc. The starting point for really this entire discussion goes back to Hey Amud Beis, where the mission over there says that kol ha'yotzei min ha'tamei tamei, kol ha'yotzei min ha'tar tar. That anything that comes out of something which is not kosher is not kosher, and anything that's coming out of something which is kosher. So that was the rule that we learned back on Daf Hey Amud Beis, and with every rule there are exceptions and there are exclusions, and so this is no different. So as we learned yesterday we had an unusual discussion in the Gemara about urine passing through the donkey. Urine passing through the donkey, so is that basically just water? Water coming in, water coming out. So there were two answers given by Rav Sheshes, or I should say better, two versions of answers given by Rav Sheshes. In the second version, so the Gemara says, look, if it goes through the donkey, so therefore it's going to not be kosher. The donkey, of course, is not kosher. The donkey, of course, is not kosher, and so therefore that which comes out that passes through is also going to be not kosher as well. Prompted the Gemara to ask the question, well, then if that's true, what about honey? Honey that goes through a bee, isn't that the same? And shouldn't the honey therefore be usher? Of course, we know honey is not usher. So to which the Gemara says, well, it doesn't really pass through the honey. Sorry. It doesn't really pass through the bee. What the honey does is it just simply is collected by the bee, but it doesn't pass through. And with that stated, that's a lot of our discussion that we've had over the last number of days. And it really sets us up nicely for the Mishnah. The Mishnah starts off, Dag Tamei Shebala Dag Tava. Mutar b'achila. So if you have a non-kosher fish that was swallowed up by a kosher fish, so then, Dag tamei shebala dag tahor. If you have a kosher fish that swallows up a non-kosher, I'm so confused already, it's amazing. A non-kosher fish swallowing up a kosher fish, so mutar b'achila, so the kosher fish inside is going to be kosher. Now, Rashi over here, an important Rashi in the beginning of the Mishnah, Rashi writes, mashma diyadei vade shebala. So Rashi says, we have to know for certain that the kosher fish was swallowed by the non-kosher fish. Consider. In other words, I'm just elaborating a little bit on Rashi. Consider that we now are looking at a non-kosher fish, right? We got out of the ocean a non-kosher fish, and there's something inside. Okay, so there's something inside the non-kosher fish. So what do we know? Not a lot, but we do know the rule. Kol ha'yotzei min ha'tamei tamei. Anything that comes out of something which is not kosher is not kosher. So without any more information, you could have easily made the argument of, well, if there's a kosher fish inside of a non-kosher fish, I know it's got fins, I know it's got scales, I know it's got simanei kashrus, but it's coming out of a non-kosher fish. So therefore, it would seem to be the most logical position to say that with the simanei kashrus, I would still say that's no good, because kol ha'yotzei min ha'tamei tamei. Rashi therefore writes that it would seemingly be that the pshat in our Mishnah is that we know that the not kosher fish actually swallowed up the kosher fish. I mean, it's kind of hard to imagine how we know this. It's a fish tank. However the circumstances work, but the Rashi is saying this because, and we'll see this more in the Gemara in just a moment, because otherwise we would have to conclude that whatever is inside of it is not kosher. Okay, so, Dag Tamei Shebala Dag Tahor Mutar B'Achila, V'Tahor Shebala Dag Tamei Asur B'Achila. The converse is also going to be true. Let's say I have a kosher fish that swallowed a non-kosher fish. So now we cut open the kosher fish. We find the non-kosher fish inside. It's not kosher. Lefisha enu gidulo. Why? Because the origination of the interior fish is not a product of the outer fish. Meaning, unlike what we saw in the last couple of dapim, kol ha'yotzei min ha'tar tahor, and we talked about mutated animals coming out, and even though those mutated animals that are coming out of a kosher animal look to be not kosher, but again, we know that it's a product of its mother, and so therefore, if the mother's kosher, the interior is going to be kosher as well. Here, however, when I'm having a fish swallowing another fish, so obviously these were two separate entities. And because they were two separate entities, so therefore, they are totally independent of one another. It happens to be that one's inside the other, but so what? They are two separate entities, so if the kosher fish finds itself inside of a non-kosher fish remains kosher. Conversely, if the non-kosher fish is inside of a kosher fish, it still remains not kosher. Good. Adkan divrei ha-mishnah, that is that's the basic point of the Mishnah. Now, taima dechazina debala. So the Gemara says, okay, now, and again, this goes back to the Rashi that we emphasized in the Mishnah, The reason why it's allowed is because we saw the swallowing. So halacha zina de bala amre ashrutz ashrutz. So the Gemara says, now if we didn't see that, so then we would have to assume that the interior fish was just simply spawned by the exterior fish. So the Gemara says, Ditanya, and we have the word minalan, but we can leave that word out. Ditanya, the Gemara quotes the following brisa. Dag tami mashrutz, dag tara mata beitzim. So the Gemara says, because we have a general rule that when it comes to non-kosher fish, so mashrutz, so they spawn. Now we already know the simanei kashrus, meaning the Torah is very clear. What are the simanei kashrus? What signs of kosher are we looking for in a fish? So that's fins and its scales, period. And also, let's remember what we learned back in Chulin. Every animal that has scales is by definition going to have fins. Obviously, the converse is not going to be true. Not every fish that has fins is going to have scales, but still, the Torah has given us simanei kashrus. But what we find throughout Shas is that there are basically other ways to tell differences, meaning just simple observation, right? So over here, a simple observation, when you have kosher fish, so they lay eggs. When I have non-kosher fish, so they spawn. So the Gemara says, Dag tami mashrutz, dag tara mata beitzim. So hachi ki chazina de bala amrina hai ivlai v'hai shrutz ashrutz. So the Gemara says, okay. So then let me ask you the following question. Non-kosher fish spawn. Great. So now what happened is that I even see the non-kosher fish swallow kosher fish. Okay. Now what? Now we cut it open. So now we cut it open. Are you absolutely sure that this kosher fish found inside is actually the fish that was swallowed? Meaning, can't we make an argument that since non-kosher fish spawn, so what is developing inside is a product of the non-kosher fish, of its mother? Either it swallowed a kosher fish and it looks like a kosher fish, okay. But is that enough evidence for us to assume that what we're eating right now is going to be the kosher fish, as opposed to maybe a mutated non-kosher fish? So I'm Rav Sheshes. So the Gemara now is going to give a number of answers, four in total, in terms of with what degree of certainty or how can we be certain that the interior fish that we're eating is in fact kosher, and it was in fact the one that was swallowed by the non-kosher fish, as opposed to one that's being produced by the non-kosher fish. Answer number one, Amar Rav Sheshes Kegon Shematzu Derech Harei. So answer number one is you find it in the digestive tract, right, towards the end. But in other words, it's in the digestive tract of the fish, so that means that it was swallowed, as opposed to being manufactured and produced inside of the fish. Rav Papa Amar Kegon Shematzu Derech Beis Abliya. It was found by the mouth. It's a similar answer, but with a greater degree of certainty that the fish discovered inside was swallowed because it's right by the mouth. Rav Nachman Amar Kegon Shematzu Shalem. Rav Nachman says that it was found whole. A developing fish inside is not going to be complete and fully developed and matured. And Rav Ashi Amar Rov Dagim Bemina Mashritzem Uchemisha Bala Lefanenu Dami. So, and Rav Ashi gives a more fundamental answer. Rav Ashi says, look, we don't have to come on to these ukimtas, to these circumstantial answers of, well, you found it this way, you found it that way, you found it in this condition. Rav Ashi says, we can answer the question halachically. What's the halachic answer? Let's look at majority. Majority of fish, when they spawn, so what do they spawn? They spawn things that look similar to them. So already now, if I find a mutated fish inside of this fish, already now it's running contrary to a rove. And we know that one of the biggest determinants in halacha is the idea of rove. So once I find now a mutated small fish inside, so already now is counteracting the rove, because most of the time, non-kosher fish are spawning fish that are like them. And so therefore, it's kamisha bala fanenu dami. It's like, it's as if the fish it's as if the non-kosher fish swallowed the kosher fish right in front of us. And so therefore, we basically know. But over here, and if you take a look at Rashi again, Rashi writes Rav Ashi Amar, meaning Rav Ashi really is a departure from the previous answers. Rashi writes, Rav Ashi Amar Masisan Lav Kidechazina Debala. We don't have to see the ingestion. We don't have to see the non-kosher fish swallowing the kosher fish. It's just simply discovery. We opened up the non-kosher fish, and there's a kosher fish inside. Now, it's true that the Mishnah's language was shebala, that it swallowed, meaning we know it swallowed. So, kevin de Rav Dagim, b'mina, mashritzim, v'zeh, shritz, min acher, kemo shebala b'faneinu dami. So what the Mishnah is just telling us is, this isn't actual knowledge, but it's halachic knowledge. Since the majority of the time, that which grows inside, which is natural to the non-kosher fish, is going to look like the non-kosher fish, it's only going to produce something, not only, but it most likely will produce something of its own kind. So therefore, when I find a kosher fish inside, so the rov now can dictate, it's as if we saw the non-kosher fish swallowed the kosher fish. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the ways to approach our Mishnah. Okay. The Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara now is going to launch into a discussion of the natural world. Okay, a lot of observations were made by the Chachamim. The Chachamim were very observant. All right, I say that with the double entendre. Okay, so they were observant and they were also very observant. And so their observations of nature were profound and recorded. And so what we have over here in the upcoming Gemaras, I didn't say this in the front end of today's daf, but today's daf is one of the, it's a fascinating daf. It's really, it really covers, it spans the world of nature, of wisdoms, of parables, of, you'll get a feel for it by the end of today. Somewhere at the midway mark, we're going to go to the scholars of Athens, Chachmei Atuna. It's a highlight in today's daf. It's a highlight in the Masechta, one of the highlights in the Masechta. So that's coming up. I'll preview it before we arrive at it. But anyway, but over here now, we're going to be just looking at the Chachamim's observations of nature. Tanu Rabbanan Dagtamei Mashritz, Dagtar Matal Beitzim. So one thing which we already recorded, moments earlier, but this is now in the context of observations of nature. So if I have a non-kosher fish, so it spawns. If I have kosher fish, it lays egg. Kol ha-molid meinik, anything that gives live birth is going to be able to nurse. V'chol ha-matil and lactate. V'chol ha-matil beitzim melakate. Anything that lays eggs is going to have to collect food in order to provide for its young. Chutz me'alev shafa pisha matil beitzim meinik. With exception to the bat. Now, I say the bat because that's generally how we translate atleif. It's not going to work out so well because our bats nowadays don't lay eggs. But okay, whatever. Well, whatever winged creature the Gemara is describing over here. Chutz me'alev shafa pisha matil beitzim meinik. So the Gemara is describing some sort of winged creature, which is the exception to the rule, where it lays eggs and at the same time it also nurses. Ha-dolphin parnveravim kivnei adam. Now, dolphinin, now we have a word in English, very similar, we call it the dolphin. Now again, to assume that what we call the dolphin is the same thing that the Gemara is quoting a dolphin, it would be, from our standpoint, very egocentric. Meaning, just because we call it a dolphin doesn't mean that that's exactly what it was referred to by the Chachmei Amorayim. So it could very well be referring to a different animal. Although, given the short description over here, it could be a reference to dolphin, but this is going to be one of the more exciting parts of today's daf. There are a lot of exciting parts of today's daf. So, ha-dolphin and parm ve-rabim kivnei adam. Now, let's say a simple pshat in the Gemara. Take a look at the Rashi. Top Rashi, hachi garsin and ha-dolphin and parm ve-rabim mi b'nei adam. So already you see that there's some discrepancy of what the correct girsa of the Gemara is. It's either with a mem or a chaf. Now, mi b'nei adam, now that's interesting. Shimba adam aleihem mit abros hemenu. So if it's with a mem, so that means that they could copulate and reproduce from humans. Humans and dolphins. And again, in the context of a Gemara, not to be quoted out of context. Whatever the Gemara was, whichever animal the Gemara is referring to, maybe our dolphins, but probably not. But the dolphins and humans could copulate and they could reproduce. And I'm jumping back to the Gemara. My dolphin in Amar Rav Yehuda b'nei yama. So, and as far as what they are, so they are the b'nei yama. Now let's turn back to Rashi, and here's an exciting Rashi for today, one you're probably not going to forget. Rashi writes, b'nei yama dogim yesh b'yam shechatim suras adam v'chatim suras dag. So there are fish in the ocean that have partial resemblance to humans and partial resemblance to fish. And in Laz, and here in the vernacular, so we refer to them as shrina, or we'd probably refer to them as sirens. Okay, so the fabled mythological sirens, so not so fabled and not so mythological, meaning the Gemara is making reference to it, at least as Rashi over here reports. There's another way to read the Gemara. Okay, now let's take a step back from Rashi. Another way to read the Gemara, and that is, Dolphin Parim Veravim Kivne Adam. Now, the gears that we have in our Gemara is that they reproduce like humans. Humans, when they reproduce, they go ventral to ventral. So dolphins, when they reproduce, they also go ventral to ventral. That is not typical in the animal world. Animals, as they reproduce, so they go ventral dorsal. So this is unusual, and that's another way to read the Gemara. And not that there's any kind of cross between the dolphin and the humans. It's just simply a description of the manner in which they reproduce. We are on Chesamad Aleph. We're two lines down. Kosher Beitzim Mibachutz Molid VeKosher Bifnim Mato Beitzim. So the Gemara once again gives another observation in terms of what gives live birth versus what lays eggs. If the Beitzim Mibachutz, if the testicles are on the outside of the male, so then Molid. So then that species is going to give live birth. And Kosher Bifnim Mato Beitzim. And if the testicles are on the inside, so then they lay eggs. So the Gemara says Zini V'Amar Shmuel Ivez Bar Kalayim Zebzeh. So the Ives and the Ives. He's describing two different types of geese. Right? The Ives shall Yishuv Rashi and the Ives shall Bar Kalayim. So okay, two different types of geese. So the Ives Bar Kalayim Zebzeh Havinan Ba. My time Amar Ba is Zebetzav Mibechus Vezebetzav Mibefnim. Now the way to know that these are two distinct types of geese is because one of them have the testicles interior as opposed to the other one, which is exterior. V'tarvay matile beitzim. Now, they both lay eggs. So the Gemara says, so this offends the rule that we just learned. The rule that we learned is that if the male of the species have mibachutz, so then therefore it's live birth. And meanwhile, over here we have two different types of geese. One is beitzim mibachutz, the other is beitzim mibifnim, and yet they both lay eggs. So Ella. So the Gemara says, so we're just tweaking the observation. So it happens to be that if the entire genitalia is exterior, that's live birth. If the zachrus is on the interior, so then they lay eggs. Okay. Kosher tashmish bayam yula bayam balayla yula balayla. If tashmish is occurring during the day, so then that means that they are later when delivering the conceived baby is going to be done during the day. And balayla yula balayla. And if the act of bia is occurring at night, meaning that the species nature to have bia at night, so then yula balayla, so then the birth is going to be at night. And kosher tashmishu bein bayom bein malayla yula bein bayom bein malayla. And if tashmish can occur during the day and during the night, so then the birth can occur during the day and during the night. Tashmishu bayom yula bayom tarnagol. So the Gemara now speaks to different types of animals where they either confine their tashmish to a part of the day or day or night. So, for example, the Gemara says tarnagol. So, balayla, yula balayla ad leif. So, the tarnagol only has bia during the day, will only give birth during the day. The ad leif will only have bia at night. And again, by the way, bat, even though earlier I suggested it's not the best translation, but the bat is a nocturnal animal. So, the ad leif over here, if it's a bat, makes sense, meaning it's a nocturnal animal. So, therefore, it's going to have bia at night. So, therefore, it's only going to give birth at night. So, and Tashmish bein bayom bein malayla, yula bein bayom bein malayla, Adam, v'chod d'damila, humans. So humans have Tashmish during the day and during the night, so therefore the actual birth can occur either during the day or during the night. Good. These are wonderful observations. They're great. Do they have halachic ramifications? And really, as far as the Gemara is concerned, that is the primary point of making these observations. This is not the Discovery Channel. And we are not over here just making casual observations about nature. As far as the Chachamim is concerned, they're always looking at it through the lens of, is there a halachic significance? Lamai nafkamina. So the Gemara asks exactly that question. Meaning, good. So why do we have to know about this? So lichad Rav Mari Berei, Rav Kahana, Damar Rav Mari Berei, Rav Kahana, Badak Bikina Shal Tarnagolim, Erev Yontif. So let's say an Erev Yontif. Okay? Today is Erev Yontif, for example. So let's say you checked out the cane. You went to the nest, you went to the coop. This Erev Yontif, and you looked and you did not find any eggs. Okay, in other words, you wanted to designate eggs for Yontif. So we know that if an egg is laid on Yontif, so we can't eat it. That's the first Mishnah in Masechta Beitza. So therefore, it has to be laid before Yontif. So I went to the coop to check to see if there were any eggs, and I didn't see any there. V'lo matzah ba'beitza. L'mach ishkim ha'matzah ba'beitza. Now, the next morning I got up early, right? I went to go daven vasikin, halavai. But in other words, I went to go daven vasikin, and so that means I woke up well before sunrise, and I see an egg over there. Wait one second. When was that egg laid? Now, as we just learned, it can't be laid during the night. Meaning, tarnagol only has bia during the day. Therefore, They only lay eggs during the day. So now let's just do simple process of elimination. So I checked yesterday, right before sunset. I didn't see any eggs. Okay. But then I woke up early this morning, and lo and behold, I discovered an egg. Oh, meaning when I say morning, by the way, I mean pre-morning, meaning before the morning started. And I discovered an egg. Well, on one hand, I checked yesterday. On the other hand, it could not have laid an egg overnight. So I'm running out of possibilities. So what do we say? So the Gemara says, Beitza Mutaris Bachila, B'yamtov. So the Gemara says, the conclusion is going to be that it's mutter. And even though you did a check yesterday, you know what? You didn't check well enough. That's the only reasonable conclusion. Meaning the Gemara cannot entertain the idea that it actually was laid overnight. Because again, based on the premise that it can't happen. So, Eimar lo bada gyalfe, And we have to say they didn't do a good examination. So the Gemara says, okay, but it seems like he did a good examination. Meaning, you want to tell me that in every scenario this happens, you have to say he didn't do a good examination? And let's say he did a good examination. Now what? Eimar yasa ruba v'chazra. Hava chadra v'yochan adam rav yochan beitza shiasa ruba. Me'er v'yonta v'chazer es mutar ochla b'yamta. So the Gemara says, okay, so we can construct a scenario where he checked so well, and yet the egg was laid during the day. How can that be? Answer. Answer goes that what happens is that the egg came out of the hen. Not entirely, but the majority of it. Now from this point forward, halachically, that is a laid egg. Even if the egg goes back in for a moment and then comes back again. So now you can imagine that the owner does the examination during the day, before Yontif. And he's checking everywhere, doesn't see an egg. And it could very well be that an egg was laid, and he didn't see it, based on what we just explained. Egg came out, Berubo, came out the majority, came back in again while he was doing the examination. He leaves, but meanwhile, halachically, the egg was laid. And again, the Gemara says, based on the premise that it could not have occurred overnight, so therefore we're only left to conclude that it happened during the day. Yes, it's true in a most unusual circumstance, but better to say that than offend the rule that these hens simply do not lay eggs at night. Compatibility between the species. Are species able to have relations with one another and produce successful offspring? Now, again, it's a violation of Kalayim. When you take them and put them together, species that do not belong together, but can it actually biologically occur? So, if Tashmisha v'Ibur Shave, if the manner in which they reproduce and the period of gestation is going to be the same, so Yiladim Megalim Zemizeh, so therefore there is a compatibility and they can reproduce. So, how come Mashamshim Panim Keneged Arif Chutz Mishloshesh Mashamshim Panim Keneged Panim? So, generally speaking, in the animal kingdom, so you have reproduction having ventral dorsal. However, there are three species that are ventral. And that is ve'elohein, dag v'adam v'nachash. So the fish, humans, and snakes. Umayshnahani, talasa. So now, why are these different? In other words, why is their behavior of the manner in which they reproduce going to be different than the rest of the animal kingdom? Ki asa ravdim, amri mamara v'hol v'dibra imahem shchina. So the Gemara says it's because that they had a direct communication with the Shechina. Now, humans, we can imagine. We have many occasions where the Shechina speaks directly to humans. And the snake as well, go back to Maisa Bracious. Now, what about fish? So without Rashi, I mean, I'm going to encourage you to look at Rashi. Mm-hmm. But without Rashi, can you have any recollection of where there was a communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shechina, and a fish? Yeah, okay, good. I had a look at Rashi. So, Vayomer Hashem Ladag. Okay, so the Tana, Gamol Achor Keneged Achor, and the Gemara says that the camel is actually dorsal to dorsal as it relates to their manner in which they reproduce. And by the way, I don't want to, I mean, I know I'm going to go way too quickly in today's daf, but like I don't want to like just brush over the idea that because these people had a communication with the divine, so therefore their manner of reproduction is going to be fundamentally different. Meaning, again, very powerful ideas expressed in the Gemara today, which I'm certainly not treating well enough. That's just simply the nature of the form of Daf Yomi, but like the power of these ideas. Tana Rabbanan Tana Golos Asim V'Echad Yom. So the Gemara now is going to move from basically the animal kingdom to a little bit of botany. Okay, how much do I know about botany? So not a whole lot. All right, I've reported here in the past. We have planted our first fruit tree, and it's fruitless.
It's weird.
Right? I know, we have to wait longer. We're patient, but it's not working out. So in terms of botany, like, I'm just starting. Anyway, the Gemara is making the following assumption, and that is that the gestation period that exists within the animal kingdom is going to have a complementary gestation period in the garden. So, and when we talk about gestation, we're basically going from flowering to fruit. That's the basic idea. So when we're talking, which, by the way, in other words, if you think about it, it makes sense. Meaning when we're talking about gestation, we're talking about from conception to birth. So for every gestation period that exists in the animal, so there is a parallel gestation period in the plant kingdom. Which in general, by the way, as far as the Gemara is concerned, it understands that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with systems. And these systems mean that you're always going to have balance in the animal kingdom, to the plant kingdom, and the Gemara has many other comments that speak to this idea of balance. And all that just happened is I lost my place. But I'm going to recover soon enough. Tanu Rabbanan Tarnegolos Lesson Vechayom. So when it comes to a chicken, so its gestation is going to be 21 days. Uchenegda bi'ilan luz. And you're going to find the similar thing by the ilan luz. And again, I'd love it if you looked at me for confirmation, like, is that right? So as far as I'm concerned, it's right. It just happens to be that I don't know the definition of so many of these items that the Gemara is speaking about. Some sort of nut tree.
Hazelnut,
he describes that. Kelev lechamishim yom, when it comes to a dog, 50-day gestation period of kenegdo be'ilan te'ina. And that's going to be the corresponding amount of gestation as it relates to the te'ina, the fig. Chatul lechamishim v'shnayim yom, a cat is 52 days of kenegdo be'ilan tus. And the tut in modern Hebrew is a strawberry. Okay, some sort of berry bush. Chazil l'shishim yom, when it comes to a pig, it's 60 days, connected to be'ilan tapuach, and that's the amount of time to go from flower to fruit by the tapuach, which we normally assume is the apple. Shuv v'chol minei shratzim, when it comes to a fox and all other shratzim, shisha chadashim, six-month gestation period, to connect them be'ilan tvua, and that's about your grain. Okay, on the farm yesterday, if I could just tease it a little bit, on the farm yesterday, so they grow oats. They're growing oats on the farm, right, for feed, the purpose of which is for feed. And basically, described the it's a winter crop, and they goes from it's he described it as the 4 month to go from seed to growth, but it's basically it's a seasonal crop, and so here the Gemara describes it as 6 months. Behema daketahar lechamisha chadashim. So when it comes to the small animals, kosher small animals, so it's a 5 month gestation, right? That comes up over and over again, and here in Bechoros, by the way, we're going to be discussing this 5 month gestation period often. So that's like a number we're going to keep repeating, and eventually it's going to sink in. Ukinegdem be'ilan gefen. And similarly, that's the amount of time that it takes to go from flower to fruit on the grapevine. Behemagasta tamele shneim asar chodesh. When it comes to the large animals of non-kosher species, so it's a 12-month gestation, ukinegdem be'ilan deko. And it is parallel to the date tree, the palm date. Tahora, now when it comes to a kosher large animal, tisha chadashim. Confirmation, by the way, from yesterday's visit, right? 9 month gestation period. Uchenegda be'ilan zayas, and that's the same thing regarding the olive fruit. Has the eva ariva dova namar vahabardalas vehapil vaakofa hakifuf. So when you talk about these predatory animals of, hopefully I'll get all of them right: the wolf, the lion, the bear, the leopard, some other type of cat, right? The elephant, the monkey, kifuf. Some sort of porcupine. So l'shaloshanim. So that's a 3-year gestation period. Connect them be'ilam b'noshuach, and similarly by the white fig. Afal l'shivim shana. Some sort of other creature. Okay, you can. Here Rashi points out whatever this creature is. The 70 years is what we're describing is not the gestation period, but from the time of birth. Its first opportunity where it can bear children. So, afa l'shivim shana, uchenegdem be'ilan charuv. Same thing with the boxer tree. Charuv zemishas netiyaso ad shas gemar peraso shivim shana. From the time that it's planted to the time that it first produces fruit, 70 years. right? You probably remember the Gemara in Tanis with Choni Hamaga. Okay. V'imei boro shaloshanim. Now, in terms of the gestation period of said animal, it's going to be 3 years. Nachash shav shanim l'osa rosh l'amatzino chaver. Now, the Nachash has a 7-year gestation period, and there is no counterpart in the botanical world. So the snake does not have balance in the botanical world. V'yesharim much sasim. Now, some say that there is a counterpart, and that is another type of tree that produces some type of fig. And in fact, now that you see this, you look at the pasuk, and literally you're looking at it with a new vantage point. So the pasuk says that the snake is going to be cursed mikol behema umikol chayas asadeh. Ime behema neskala mechayel koshekain. Now, if it's going to be cursed greater than that of a behema, for sure, it's going to be cursed greater than that of a chaya. And basically what we're going to learn out over here is, based on the ratio between Chaya and Behema, really we're starting from Behema, going to Chaya, so, and then we're going to move that ratio over from the Behema over to snake, so that's how we're going to get to 7 years. So, Umayniyo Chamor Mechatol, so we're going basically from the Chamor to the Chatol. Now, the chamor, as we already described, had a 1-year gestation period. The chatul has a 52-day gestation period. So if you do the math, so it comes out to a ratio of 7 to 1, right? The chamor, 1 year, chatul, 52 days, so that's 7 to 1. So kachnes kalahumi behema, achas l'sheva. So that means to say that the snake now is going to operate at a 1 to 7 ratio. So since now the chamor is 1 year, so that means the snake is going to go 7 times that amount, 7 years. Dable Shavshani. Aim of the Gemara just simply wants to know, why don't you do ratios in other directions, or why don't you choose other animals? So Aim of Kishim Shin Skala Chai may behem achas shoshanim maini o arike chamor. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we compare the ari to the chamor? The ari is a 3-year gestation period, the chamor is a 1-year gestation period. That gives us a ratio of 3 to 1. So Niskalahu mechaya achas shoshanim. And why don't we say now that his gestation period, the Havalei Teisha Shanim, should now go 9 years? Because at a 1-to-3 ratio, and then going from the Ari, which is the 3-year gestation period, and now multiplying that by 3, that gets us to 9 years. So to which the Gemara says, Miksiv mikol chaya umikol behema, mikol behema umikol chayaksiv, aruhu mi behema shenizkalu mechaya. So the Gemara says, from the pasuk, it's clear that the direction has to be comparing the snake to a behema, to a chaya. So that's why we have to go from Chaya, which is the Chatul, to Behema, which is the Chamor, and then from the Chamor over to the snake. Okay. V'ema kishem shezkal Behema mechaya echad l'shalosh, umayniu eiz mechatul. So the Gemara says, now why don't we go from the goat to this? Why don't we go from the cat to the goat? Now again, the cat is already identified as being a 52 gestation day period. Now the Aes is a small kosher animal, which is 5 months. Translate that into days, that's 150 days. So basically, we're looking at a ratio of 50 to 150. That's 1 to 3, basically. So, kach niskalahu me behema echa l'sholosh l'havale chamisa yarche. And now, give him that ratio going from the Aes, so that's 150 times 3. So that gets us to chamisa yarche, 15 months. Right, I could do the same math just from the perspective of months. 5 months times 3, 50 months. So mikol ha-behema ksiv. So the Gemara says, okay, but the pasuk says mikol ha-behema, meaning from any of the animals, that we're going to be choosing the animal with the longest gestation. The Gemara gives another suggestion, which is that this is klala, meaning this is a curse. And so therefore, when we talk about curse, so it's going to be as severe and as serious as one can imagine. So comparing it to the goat is serious, but more serious would be comparing it to the chamor. Okay. Adkan. That takes us to the first half of today's daf. And so what we all experienced in the first half of today's daf is observations of nature by the chachamim, speaking to the systems of Maisa Bereishis, balance in creation. Really a fascinating first half of today's daf, and only to be rivaled by the second half of today's daf. And now we're going to get to the Chachmei Aten, the wise men of Athens. We're going to have a debate over here a sparring match between Rav Yeshua ben Chananya and the Chachmei Atun, the wise men of Athens. Okay, who are the wise men of Athens? So your guess is better than mine. So good luck. Meaning, but we know, of course, that Athens in Greece was founded on philosophers, and the classic philosophers were all of Greek in nature. And so the Chachmei Atun could be a reference to one of them in specific, in particular. It could be just a general discussion regarding worldview, meaning we have the Jewish worldview on one side, and they have the Greek worldview on the other side, and the clash between the two. Okay, now, here's where things are going to get tricky. I'm going to, for the most part, do a great job navigating through the Gemara and explaining the basic pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara over here is rich with depth. There is much to discuss in the Gemara over here. In fact, the classic commentaries on the Agadata go ahead and give the deeper meanings. So to look at the classic commentaries of the Gemara of Divrei Agadata, so they are no particular order, the Maharal, the Maharsha, the Gra. So they give a lot of detail, rich detail, in terms of the meanings that lie behind this. If I can give you a book recommendation for today, really a safer recommendation, so The Juggler and the King. The Juggler and the King is authored by Rev Aaron Feldman, current Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, and he basically takes the comments of the Gra on these Gemaras over here, and he summarizes them in English. In easy to read English. I mean, easy to read, not so easy to understand. But all the Gemaras that we're learning over here, which obviously has tremendous detail and tremendous depth, are all discussed in the book, The Juggler and the King. So, and just one more comment before we start with the Gemara. I always marvel at Rashi, and I just appreciate Rashi more and more. Meaning when Rashi sees these Gemaras, obviously these Gemaras are Divrei Agadata, which you could just dig into it and keep digging and digging in terms of meaning and content. And meanwhile, as far as Rashi is concerned, Rashi is just interested in the simple pshat of the Gemara. Meaning, does Rashi not see the rich detail of the Gemaras coming up? I can't imagine, right? Rashi was brilliant. So it just happens to be that as far as Rashi is concerned, he had a specific goal in terms of what he was trying to accomplish in writing a commentary to the Gemara, and he was just interested in the simple reading of the Gemara. And so even though there is Rashi on the summit, and like when we're going to see some really wild Gemaras coming up. And what did Rashi think when he saw that? Rashi, as far as his commentary to the Gemara is concerned, Rashi had a mission, Rashi had a goal, just say simple pshat in the Gemara, which is what he does over here. Okay, Amalei Kesel Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. So the discussion opens up with a conversation between Caesar and Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. Nachash Akama Mi'aber Amolid, and now we understand, by the way, segue between the second half of the Gemara and the first half, because it starts with a conversation where we already know the answer because of what we saw earlier. So how long is the gestation period of a snake? So Amalei L'shev Shni, so 7 years. So V'hai Sabed De Be'atuna Arvi'inu V'olid L'tlas. So he says, you know, those wise men of Athens. So it happens to be that they copulate with the snake, and they give birth after 3 years. So the response of Rabbi Yoshua is, Hanu mi abra havu mi ikara dalchnin. Nah. Snakes were already pregnant for 4 years. So in other words, what they were doing is they were copulating with already pregnant snakes. V'hakam ishamshi shemushi. So the Gemara says, well, yeah, but aren't they having relations with the snakes? So the Gemara says, Inu nami mishamshi ka'adam. So the Gemara says, okay. Look at the human species. The human species has relations even though the female is pregnant. There's no different. So basically, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya says, your citation of the Athens is not going to change my mind one bit. So the Caesar says to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, but they're really smart, to which Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya says, Anan chachim minayhu. Yeah, but I'm smarter. Okay, so what happens to humility? So you have to always balance humility with also an understanding of who you are. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya understood exactly who he was. And so, okay, so they're smart. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya says, and so am I. So, Ichachima zil zachinu vaisinuli. So Caesar says to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, really, you think you're smarter than them. Okay, here's my challenge to you. You're going to go to Athens. You're going to go visit the Chachmei Atun, the wise men of Athens. You're going to debate them. And if you're going to be victorious, so then you will bring him back to me. Amarle, kama havashis and gavre. So he says, how many are there? There's 60 of them. Amar Leh, so Rav Yishuv ben Chananya, with his confidence, basically says, okay, prepare a boat for me. That's good, basically, because what's going to happen is I'm going to go there and I'm going to debate and I'm going to win and I'm going to bring them back. So all I need from you, Caesar, is just simply a vessel so that when I do come back, I come back with all 60 of them. Amar Leh, Avile Sfinta de Isbe Shisambate, so make for me a boat with 60 compartments, V'chobese Isbe Shisam Bistarke, and I want in the boat for the 60 different rooms, 60 chairs. So, okay, and basically I want the I'm going to bring them back. And interesting how he's going to have them all separate from one another on their return.
There's no room for the rabbi. There's
only 50. He's a captain. Avalei, Avalei Sfinta Dispation, we did this. Avalei. Okay, so prepared. Okay, so now he's en route, Rav Yishuv ben Chananya is en route to Athens to go face the Chachmei Aton to debate them and beat them in a debate. Simple, right? Okay. Kimata lahasam ala betavcha. So now the first thing he has to do is he has to find out where they're hiding out. And they're hiding out. And they have a secret lair. And so he has to first determine where exactly they're hiding. So he goes to the butcher. So ala betavcha ashkechelahu gavra de kapashe chiyuse. Now he finds that what the butcher is doing is he's skinning the animal. He's flaying the animal. So amar le reshkol zvune. So Rav Yeshua says to the butcher, do you have a head for sale? Amar le in. Now the butcher didn't realize that that Rabbi Yeshua was referring to not the head of the animal, but the head of the butcher. So his response was, yeah, sure. Meaning, yeah, any one of these heads. So Amalei Bekami, so he says, well, how much is it? Amalei Bepalga de Zuze. So he says, well, it's going to be half a zuz. Yaivle. So he gave him a half a zuz. Lesof Amalei Anaresha de Chiyusa Amalach. So the do you think that I was referring to one of the heads of the animals? Okay, and throughout so many of these Gemaras, what we're going to see is a lot of double entendre. Meaning that, look, they're in a debate, especially between very wise people, so they speak, and sometimes they speak in riddles. And so over here, when I say sometimes, by the way, I mean most of today's, most of the debate's going to be in riddles. So over here, so Rabbi Yeshua says to the butcher, I wasn't referring to the animal's head. I was referring to your head. Now, Amar Leh, I bais the ish bakech. So, Sagi, ach vile pischa de beyasuna. So he says, look, you want to get out of this deal? Or basically, I'm going to take your head. Right? And if you don't want me to take your head, so then what you're going to do is you're going to show me the entrance to the scholars of Athens, and good. And then I'll release you from the deal. Amar Leh, mistafina de chol demach ve kat lele. So now the butcher says to Rabbi Yeshua, look, you basically put me in a no-win situation. Either you're going to kill me, or the scholars of Athens are going to kill me. Somebody's going to kill me, because if I go ahead and report and rat out their hiding spot, so they're going to kill me. So either way, I'm going to lose. So Amar Leh, Dari Kricha Dikanya. So Rabbi Yeshua gives the following advice to the butcher. What you're going to do is you're going to take a bundle of twigs. V'chimatis lahasam zakva keman dekamatbach. And then as you pass by the entrance of the scholars of Athens, you're basically going to pause for a moment as if you're resting. And that is what, that way you're going to tip off to me where the entrance to the hiding spot is. Azo ishkach de rabbanai mi gavayu de rabbanai mi burai. Now, posed at the doorway of the entrance to the Chachmei Aton, the scholars of Athens, are guards. Guards on the inside, guards on the outside. Di chazukara da'ila katle le lebrau, danafke katle le gavai. Now, these guards are going to be subject to the death penalty if any kind of footprints are discovered. If the footprints are discovered going into the den, so that means to say that the guards on the outside did not do their job and they're going to get killed. Conversely, if footprints are heading out from inside to the outside, so that means somebody was able to escape, and so the guards on the inside were killed. So what did Rav Yeshua do? Avchel esantle katle legavai. So what he did is he took his shoes and he switched them around. So even though he's walking inside with the footprints as if somebody were walking outside. Now, what happened was when that was discovered, when those footprints were discovered, the guards on the inside were killed. Afchel sandale. And then what he did is he now switched the feet around. So now it looked like somebody was walking inside. Kala lukulu, and the rest of the guards were then killed as well. Okay. So now all the guards are killed and now he has entrance into the den. Now, as far as the Chachmei Aton, so we know there were 16 total, and so now, here's how they were situated. The young scholars were sitting up top. The older scholars were sitting on the bottom. Amar. And he says, look, even just saying hello is going to be a puzzle, but a puzzle that I can solve. He says, Iyav nisham lahane katle lehane. Savre ana adifna da ana kashina tfe. Vi'inu dardike. He says, look, here's the problem. Let's say I first turn my attention to the top and first extend shalom aleichem to the ones up top. So even though they're in a physically higher, in a higher level, but nevertheless, they're the young ones. The old ones are clearly on the floor. Mm-hmm. And the old ones now are going to get offended. Okay, so I'll say hello first to the older ones. Yeah, but the younger ones who place themselves on the top clearly view themselves as the ones on top. And so therefore, whoever he says hello to first is going to offend the other party. Amr Shamalachu. So he says hello to everybody. Shamalachu is a way of avoiding this first pitfall. Amr Lei Mayavidatech. So they ask them, they ask him, well, what are you doing? Who are you? What are you doing? So Amr Lei Chachmina Diyudai. So first he introduces himself. I happen to be one of those Jewish scholars. Anabi'ina Lemigmar Chachmas Minaichu. And what I would like to do is I would like to learn Chachma from you. So Ihachi Nibailach. So he says, if so, so we are going to ask something from you. Amr Lehu Lechai. To which he says, fine. Izechisuli. And now here comes the challenge. And Rabbi Yeshua says to him, look, if you guys best me, so called to be Isa Avidabi. So then I'm going to let you do whatever you want to me. So if you are the decided winners of this debate, you guys can do whatever you want. And the izachina bechu ichlu gavai bisfinasa. Now, if I win the debate, so then what we're going to do is we're all going to go on a boat and we're all going to head back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So now the challenge has been issued, and here we go now with, to my count, 11 different challenges that exist now between the Chachmei Aton and Rav Yeshua Ben Chananya. And the plan right now is to hit all 11. We're going to go a little bit over in terms of time. If you have to go, that's fine. But it's all going to be on record. You can listen a little bit later. So, Amar Lei Ha'u Gavra Da'azu Abai Isasam. So, number one. Now, again, here's what I'm going to do just to make sure that we're all clear. I'm going to read and translate the Gemara. Meaning, I'm going to be Rashi. Or better stated, I'm going to try to be Rashi. Okay, I'm going to read and translate the Gemara, and I'll give us like the basic understanding. Again, there's so much depth to every one of these challenges, every one of the responses that are given by Rabbi Yeshua to the challenges. Everything over here is bigger than what it seems. These are not just simple riddles that require a solution. They speak to profound ideas, philosophical and political. And these are all much bigger ideas than just simply presented here in the Gemara. And over here, I just get us started by giving simple pshat. Okay, wonderful. So a man wants to marry a woman. And the family says no. And so now what? You're gonna go bigger? You're gonna go after a woman who is higher in stature? If you've been rejected by one woman who's of a particular stature, and now you're gonna go after a woman who's higher, who has a higher stature? So how can that possibly be? And Jeff, if I could just tease it for a moment. Like you understand, like over here. Like, you, B'nai Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already went after the Goyim. And they said no. And now he's going to go after B'nai Yisrael, and he's going to have a relationship with B'nai Yisrael. And well, that's ridiculous. Meaning, that's the challenge of the Athenians. So Shagol Sechta, so what Rav Yeshua did is he responded without even saying a word. So what he did is he took a peg, and Datsa L'tasai, and he tries to put it into the lower portion of the wall. But the lower portion of the wall, obviously, which is obviously carrying a lot of weight, so there's no cracks in the lower portion of the wall, and there's nowhere for the peg to fit in. A'al li'ilai al. And then what he does is he takes the peg and he moves it up a little bit higher in the wall, finds a crack, and is able to put it in. Oh. So yeah. So even though you get rejected by one woman and her family, but what you could do is you can sometimes go a little bit higher, and there's a place for you to fit in. Okay. Amar hainami misrami bei mazlei. And he says, look, that's how mazel works. That's just simply how mazel works. Number two. Gavra de usif vitarif. Let's say a person lent money, and now the borrower, he defaulted. And now he's got to foreclose on the borrower's property. And it's a mess, and it's just a nightmare. So my chazda de hazer usif. And now, what's this lender going to do? He's going to lend again? In other words, why is he going to be successful the second time if he experienced failure the first time? Amalahu gavra azalagma kato kamatuna. So to which Rabbi Yeshua responds in the following manner. Let's say a person is now harvesting in the reed field, and kato kamatuna, and he cuts down the first bundle, but he's just simply not strong enough to pick it up. And so now he's got a bundle on the floor and he can't pick it up. So now what is he going to do? So here, smart move. Kato manach ilave, so he's going to cut another bundle. Now if he can't pick up the first bundle, so what's he doing now cutting another bundle? Adis rami inish madlele. Because what eventually he knows what's going to happen is that, look, how am I going to solve for the first bundle? Obviously somebody's going to have to come and help me. So as long as I have other people coming and help me anyway, so let me have now more cut down, so that when help finally arrives, so we can pick all this up. Similarly, when someone lends money, so even though the first loan resulted in a default and a foreclosure, and so fine, and there's going to have to be people coming to his aid. Eventually, when all said and done, what you'll do is you'll lend out other monies, and when help does finally arrive, so then you're going to reap back everything back. Okay, number three. Amrle, Amla Mili Di Debadai. So they said, look, could you tell us something which is absolutely foolish? So he responds, Rav Yeshua responds in the following manner. Amalu Hava hu kudnaisa diyalda. So there was a mule who gave birth. Now hopefully you already figured out the riddle. Okay, but there was a mule who gave birth. Vahave talale pitka, and there was a note hanging around the newly born mule, and Vikasabe Damasik Bebe Abba me alfe zuza. And he says that there was a claim against the father for 1,000 zuz, an exorbitant amount of money. So Amr Lehu Kudnaisa Miyalda, so to which the Athenian said to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, and does the mule give birth? So Amr Lehu Haini Omili Debadai. He says, okay, good, you figured it out. I mean, that's exactly what the foolish comment was. Milcha Kisarya Bemai Machile. So when you have salt that spoils, so what do you use to salt it?
How does that happen?
Right? How to stop salt from spoiling? Now, of course, salt doesn't spoil.
Right.
You figured it out. So Amar Lehu Besilsa de Kunaisa. So he says, oh, that's very simple. So what you're going to do is you're going to take the placenta, the afterbirth of a mule, and you will use it now to preserve the salt that's going bad. So the Gemara says, Umika Silsa de Kunaisa. So the Athenians look at him and is like, that's ridiculous. In other words, how there is no afterbirth of a mule. A mule doesn't give birth. So Umilcha Beit Misare. So to Rav Yehoshua says, good. And as far as your challenge was concerned, salt going bad, salt doesn't go bad. So just basically, I answered absurdity with absurdity. Good. Number four. Banalan Besa Ba'avira, Da'ama. So what they demanded is that he build some sort of building in the air, suspended in the air. So Amr Shem Tala Ben Rikia La'ara. So what he did is he said Shem Hashem, and now he is suspended in the air by saying Shem Hashem. Amr Lehu Asikuli Liv Nevetina. So he says, okay, do me a favor, just pass me the bricks. And of course, they were unable to pass him the bricks. And so once again, he won that battle. Okay, round five. Okay, this is a heavyweight battle. It's going to go the distance. Round five. Mitziyasa da'amahecha. Where's the center of the earth? So, zakfa le'etzba osei. So he basically points his finger, let's say, right here. This is the center of the earth. So, amalu hacha. So he says here, so Amalei Umi Yemer. So the Athenian said to him, and how do you know? So he answers back very casually and very calmly. So Aisu Ashle Umashchu. Oh, so just bring me some ropes, bring me some rulers, and we'll measure together. Right? Sounds reasonable, right? Now obviously it's an impossible task, not impossible, but close to it, to go ahead and start measuring from one end of the earth to the other. And again, I understand the earth is round, right? I'm not one of those flat earth people, okay? And the, but in other words, but as much as you can't measure, so that's as much as this is the center of the earth. Islan bire bedabra aila lamasa. Look, there's a well over there. Could you do me a favor? Could you move the well into the city? Right? Simple, right? And amrle afshilu chavle mipari va'aile. So he says, oh, no problem at all. You want me to move a well? Just make the ropes out of the bran of once you make ropes out of bran, so I'm going to move the well from over there to over here. Again, absurdity matching absurdity. Islan, this is round seven. Islan recha de tvira chaita. You know, we had a millstone. and it broke. And we want you to not fix it, but stitch it back up together again. Okay? And no big deal, right? Amo kruchli minai gardei v'achtaya. So he says, look, no problem at all. I need thread. But obviously, I don't need any kind of thread, but I need threads from the stone. So when you prepare for me thread from the stone, so then I'll go ahead and I'll stitch it up again. Okay, round eight. Mashra desakina b'may katle. Let's say you're growing knives out in the field. You heard me right, but I'll just say it again. You're growing knives out in the field. So now, how do I harvest my field? Now, generally speaking, what do I use to cut the field? So I use a knife. But what am I going to use? I'm going to use a knife to cut knives? That's ridiculous. So, bikarna dechamra. So the Gemara says, oh, well, you use the horn of a donkey, of course. The horn of a donkey. Umi'ika karna lechamra. Now, does the donkey have horns? Umi'ika mishra desakina. Well, again, just matching absurdity with absurdity. So my donkey with horns is going to be able to cut your field of knives. Oh, there's no field of knives? Yeah, there's no donkey with horns. Now, Aisu, round nine. Aisu le tre beye. So, okay, now two eggs were brought. Amrle hai dezaksa uchmase, v'hai dezaksa chivarta. Which one came from the black hen, which one came from the white hen, and the eggs themselves are not going to be able to tell the difference. Aisu le iu tre gavine, to which he brought two pieces of cheese. Amalu hai de izi uchmase, v'hai de izi chivarta. Which one came from the black goat, which came from the white goat. Okay, good. He won round nine as well. Round ten. Ritsutsa demaisa mehecha nafek ruche. If a chick dies while in the egg, how is the soul departing? Okay. So mehecha da'al nafak. And to which Rav Yeshua gives a very brief but profound answer. The same way it came in is the same way it's going to come out. Okay. Achvilan, around 11. Achvilan mana deloshavi chavile. Could you show us a kli that's not worth its depreciation? Meaning that this kli somehow, its depreciation is greater than its original value. Okay, you drive a new car off a lot. So you're going to see instant depreciation. But fine. But still, the value is going to exceed the depreciation. Can you show me something where its depreciation is going to actually exceed its original value? So I know, I also have some ideas. So Isa Budja, Pashtua, Lohava Ayo, Bitara, Amalu, Isomara, Sisrua. So he says, well, here's what you're going to do. You're going to take a mat, and basically we're going to use it as a doorway. The problem, of course, is that the mat is greater than that of the doorway. Oh, no problem at all. So instead of cutting the mat, because we don't want to cut the mat, so what we're going to do is we're just going to simply cut open the entrance of the doorway. So we're going to get a general contractor to cut open the doorway so that the mat can fit into the entrance of the doorway. And Amalu Isa Mare Sisrua, bring axes, cut it down, and Haino Mana Doloshava Chavile. So now here's what you just discovered. How much did that mat cost? Whatever it cost was not nearly worth the amount of effort, energy, and expense to go in order to fit that mat into the doorway. Period. Okay, let's pause right over here. Okay. Debate is over. 11 rounds, as I have it per my count. And in all 11 rounds, it seems like Rav Yeshua was the undisputed winner. He won all 11 rounds. And so now, from this point going forward, and this is where we're going to pick it up tomorrow, so we are going to be looking at the Athenians being brought back to Yerushalayim and the epilogue to the story.